Sketch Patch.
Been racking my brain for a few weeks. And that's a lie. I've been racking my brain for longer than that. I've been racking my brain since July to find a proper send-off for Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor. And mind you, I don't have a lot of time to rack my brain with such things. I work a full-time plus job that leaves very little downtime for much more than a fleeting thought. I got myself into the habit of carrying around a small notebook so that when I had a fleeting thought, worth a damn as far as Mr. Capaldi and his portrayal of the Doctor was concerned, I'd be able to jot it down and expand upon it later on. But that notebook is still empty. And that's another lie. The notebook is empty, but it's gone. Lost in the laundry or in my car, or perhaps it is lost on a dark, wet street somewhere, standing as an empty reminder to the greatness of the 12th Doctor's run on Doctor Who. Perhaps some child picks up the notebook, and though there is literally nothing in it for them to read, maybe they will be inspired to write about Peter Capaldi themselves, with the open and empty pages within, unless the pages are too wet to write on, from the dark, wet street upon which they find the notebook. Or maybe they will write something completely different, and it will turn into something amazing. It only exists because of my love for Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor. And while all of that may be true, or may not be true, the feeling and the thoughts I have running around in my head, fleeting as they are, capture what Peter Capaldi's performance means to me. But they are too difficult to communicate. And still the attempt must be made regardless of the difficulty. And Adric, you little bastard, I know you're here somewhere. You will take part in this conversation.
Damn it, Adric. You will play the role of co-host. I know you're slinking around and avoiding me. Don't make me angry before we're about to go to...
I must do it.
Earth is in sector 8023 of the third quadrant. I don't see what the law of probability's got to do with it.
It's me. It's Shawnee Wan. And that's great, Adric. Who was the 12th Doctor? It's difficult to talk about the 12th Doctor without mentioning Stephen Moffat, or the 11th Doctor. And mentioning Moffat, talking about Matt Smith's 11th Doctor, is not an issue, but I don't want to delve too deeply into either man because I'll do that when I produce a Stephen Moffat episode. But still, I think it's impossible to talk about the characteristics of one Doctor without having some discussion on who the Doctor was before he became that Doctor. You got to talk about that Doctor before you talk about this Doctor. Get me? Adric, you with me? Good. The 11th Doctor was a Doctor of epic stories, or at least the attempt at epic stories. Every Doctor has similar qualities, but some incarnations amp up certain qualities more than other qualities. Or some doctors amp up qualities that another doctor does not, yet they all share these same qualities because basically they're all the same person. But they're not. Adric, you know what I'm talking about. The 11th doctor was a doctor full of hope, optimism, and fun, good-natured. But throughout Matt Smith's run, his doctor hinted at a darker side when facing his enemies, or when he was monologuing about guilt he felt or atrocities he committed. And we know 11 loved to monologue. He loved to give speeches. The speech doctor was Matt Smith. And maybe there are some examples of the 11th doctor letting these darker tendencies, his dark side, come to the surface, but honestly, I have difficulty naming them off the top of my head. So maybe a way to look at it, to look at the dangerous, dark doctor that 11 hints at being, is to look at the darker parts of the doctor's personality as a whole. And if we're really thinking about it, the doctor isn't a dark character. So when we say dark, honestly, we mean mean, like the mean parts of the doctor. So if we're talking about mean doctors, you have the first doctor, the sixth doctor, maybe a little bit of the 10th doctor. And as far as the modern era of Doctor Who is concerned, and maybe all of Doctor Who, the meanest, ergo the darkest of all the doctors, the 12th doctor, Peter Capaldi, before his regeneration. The doctor had had his longest lifetime yet as the 11th doctor. Whatever barometer there is for the length in Earth years of a specific doctor's lifetime, surely it was set in the final 11th doctor story, in Matt Smith's last story, The Time of the Doctor, because he spent a lot of generations on Trenzalore in a town called Christmas. He aged and aged and aged and aged. As the story goes, in the third act, we learn the 11th Doctor had used up all his regenerations. As fans of the show, we already knew this. We knew that the Doctor was able to regenerate himself, and he could do this 12 times for 13 different faces. Matt Smith's 11th Doctor, though he was the 11th Doctor, that's the 13th face the Doctor had. 10 regenerated into himself, and the War Doctor isn't considered a Doctor by the Doctor, whatever that means. Getting back to the third act of The Time of the Doctor, he used up all his regenerations, and he had figured out all the mysteries that he had encountered during his lifetime, the 11th Doctor's lifetime. Even the atrocities he committed during the Time War and the destruction of Gallifrey had been made right as much as he could possibly make them right. So that's going back to the Day of the Doctor, the 50th anniversary, when his companion, Clara Oswald, returns to him at the end, and this is at the end of his lifetime. 11 is an old man, feeble, but most importantly, seemingly at peace with himself. The new cycle of regeneration that Clara is able to convince the Time Lords to gift him with, to bless him with, comes as a surprise that saves the 11th Doctor at the very last moment. So a Time Lord who had been alive for nearly 1,000 years, much more than that, by the end of the 11th Doctor's lifetime. This Time Lord, at peace with the end of his life, is suddenly not going to see that end, at least not in the manner that he believed he would. The 11th Doctor is happy to be rejuvenated, obviously, and he's able to use his regeneration, regeneration power, to defeat the Daleks for attacking Trenzalore, which he had sworn to protect. He's happy to defeat the Daleks because he's protecting the town, and he's also protecting his home of Gallifrey, which has been found. I'm not going to get too much into the Time of the Doctor and the specifics of that story. What's important is the 11th Doctor and where his head is at, and it was at peace with the end of his life. He is happy to save the day. He's happy to be victorious. But is he happy to begin a new cycle of 12 regenerations again? Basically, and this is a dark question for Doctor Who, but if you've lived for over 1,000 years, you're at peace with your life coming to an end, and you suddenly find out it's not only not going to come to an end, but you got like a good another 1,000 years plus in front of you. Are you happy about that? The older, grayer 11th Doctor is rejuvenated briefly to a young version of himself, and we see probably the quickest regeneration of one incarnation into another. All the regeneration energy had been used against the Daleks, so the physical change is quite quick, and we see the 13th version. I'm sorry, yes, the 13th version of himself, the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi. Peter Capaldi, at age 55, was the oldest actor to be cast as the Doctor in the modern era of Doctor Who. And he's the same age as William Hartnell when he was cast as the first Doctor, and he was the oldest Doctor in the classic era of Doctor Who. So essentially, Peter Capaldi is the oldest Doctor to be cast, unless William Hartnell's older by a few months, the same age. Capaldi was even older than any actor was when they finished playing the Doctor, again, with the exception of William Hartnell's first Doctor. Peter Capaldi's talent and his understanding of the character put aside, there is intention with his casting to reflect where the Doctor is as a conglomerate, as a summation of all his versions up until the time of regeneration, much like every regeneration that has come before. For example, is it a mystery why Tom Baker's fourth Doctor ends the longest run of any Doctor, with the most stories to his credit, with a regeneration into the youthful fifth Doctor, played by Peter Davison, who, by the way, until the casting of Matt Smith, was the youngest actor to be cast as the Doctor? What I'm hinting at, basically, and it doesn't make sense because I'm saying that the fourth Doctor, who had the longest run of any Doctor, regenerates into a young man. Whereas Matt Smith, who was also a very young Doctor, regenerates into an old man. Matt Smith had the longest lifetime. Tom Baker, as the fourth Doctor, had the longest run. The longest periods of time, one regenerates into a young version and one regenerates into an old version. But there's reason for that. The fourth Doctor needed to regenerate it into a young man because, honestly, at the end of his run in Legopolis, he's tired. You can see that he's tired. That story is not a typical Fourth Doctor story. He's not mailing it in, but you can tell he's weary of his lifetime as that part of his lifetime. Whereas Matt Smith is physically old, dying of old age. And it's the end of his regeneration cycle. It's the end of his 12 regenerations. So the first regeneration for the new cycle, it could make sense if he regenerated into a young man. But the fact that he regenerates into Peter Capaldi, an older man, reflects more the lifetimes, the experiences that the Doctor has been through, the wisdom, the knowledge that the Doctor has learned, and the age of Peter Capaldi, going back to the casting of Peter Capaldi, the physical body of the 12th Doctor, it makes it easier to see him as cranky and stubborn, short-tempered, and these three qualities can be taken as qualities of a mean person, and a mean person, a mean Doctor, in the Doctor Who universe translates to a darker Doctor. And I'm using my sarcastic, cynical voice, but there's nothing really sarcastic or cynical about it, because as we go through 12's stories and lifetime, we do see some darker tendencies, much more than we see in 11's lifetime. But 12, while he talks about guilt, he has no regret about being mean and cranky and short-tempered and stubborn and detached, which is a key word that we will be using as we go through the 12th Doctor's lifetime. Detached. The 12th Doctor embraces these qualities where the 11th Doctor never really displayed them, but would monologue about them as a way to intimidate his enemies or as a way to, I don't know. I don't know why he was doing it. And I'm not going to talk about it because Matt Smith's been gone for years and I don't care. Whatever. Peter Capaldi's age, his physical appearance, they lead to an easier acceptance. First off, that the Doctor is alien, despite the human characteristics that he displays and at times idolizes. The 10th Doctor was fascinated with humanity, and the 11th Doctor wanted to be a part of humanity. 12th Doctor takes a sharp left turn and expresses frustration with humanity despite embracing a self-imposed role as the protector of Earth, and I think that's really interesting. Basically, what I'm saying is this. Peter Capaldi's cast, because he's an awesome actor, is probably the main reason, and I love him. But his age makes it easier for the 12th Doctor to be cranky and stubborn and short-tempered and quote-unquote mean and detached, which makes it easier for him to be accepted as an alien, as not human, and the Doctor is an alien. But if you don't know that, and you watch the 10th Doctor, or the 11th Doctor, do you know, without knowing the Doctor's backstory, do you know that they're alien? The 12th Doctor has human characteristics that he displays at times, and at times he idolizes them. But for the most part, he is frustrated with humanity. The 10th Doctor was fascinated with humanity. The 11th Doctor wanted to be a part of humanity. The 12th Doctor does not. He idolizes humanity, but he has a better understanding of it than the 10th and 11th. And he's frustrated with it, but he thinks humanity is important enough that he embraces a self-imposed role as the protector of humanity. And how many times have you heard 12 say that in a story? The Earth is under my protection. The other Doctors say it too, but the 12th Doctor really embraces it and also gets really frustrated with a lot of human beings. So all of this said, who is the 12th Doctor? And what makes this incarnation stand out from the previous 12 incarnations? What? No, what did you just say? I heard you say something. You're not going to talk now. Okay. Break. He writes break. He writes break on a piece of paper. He won't say anything, but he writes break on a piece of paper. We're going to take a break there. All right, Adric, we'll take a break there. And when we get back, we're going to talk about what makes the 12th Doctor stand out from all the other non-12th Doctors. Adric, Shawnee Wan, Adric, Sir Barristan the Bold, conveniently quiet for the time being, the dryer, working hard, late at night. Sometimes I think the dryer is working against me, but that would be crazy paranoid to think something like that. Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor will be leaving us on Christmas Day, and Adric can attest to this, my wife can attest to this, my stepson can attest to this, my dog, who is also not joining us today, Daisy Bell, can attest to this. I'm very sad. I just am. I'm very, very sad. For a few reasons. I think since the end of Series 8, I believed that Peter Capaldi and the 12th Doctor would be the 4th Doctor of the modern era. I thought he would be around for like 6, 7, maybe 8 years. This is an actor who loved Doctor Who growing up. And they all do. They all loved Doctor Who growing up, but if you look at the actors that have played the Doctor in the modern era, and I'm not commenting on what kind of Doctor they were, if I enjoyed them or not. I mean, I love all the Doctors, and any fan of Doctor Who loves all of the Doctors. The 6th Doctor, the 7th Doctor, they don't get as much love as the 4th Doctor or the 10th Doctor, but nobody dislikes them. If you look at the modern era Doctors, Christopher Eccleston being the 9th, he didn't seem like he was all that familiar with the property. The 10th Doctor was a huge Doctor Who fan, but how huge can he be? He's a younger guy when he was cast. I'm sure he remembered the Fourth Doctor, Fifth Doctor, Sixth Doctor, Seventh Doctor, but he wasn't around for the First Doctor's run or the Second Doctor's run. Matt Smith was definitely not, though he went back when he was cast as the 11th Doctor. He went back and he really based his Doctor on Patrick Troughton's performance as the Second Doctor. Peter Capaldi, at age 55, well, when he was a kid, 7-8 years old, the First Doctor's run had ended when he would start watching Doctor Who, which I'm assuming was at 7 or 8 years old. That would still be the Second Doctor. The Third Doctor, Fourth Doctor would be right in his wheelhouse. The best years of classic Doctor Who is what he grew up on. He had an outstanding understanding of the Doctor long before he was cast. And it's his dream. It was his dream to be the Doctor. You hear those stories about Peter Capaldi, at least during Series 8, and I'm sure the same thing for Series 9 and Series 10. On his days off, he's still on set watching the production because he appreciates it so much. And I don't think that Matt Smith had as close a relationship with Stephen Moffat as Peter Capaldi did. It seemed like the man and the show at the time when the man joined was a perfect match and it should go on and on. And I did have my own conspiracy theories when he said he was leaving, and I'm not going to talk about them now, because this is a tribute. Well, I hope it's a tribute, but it's a look at his performance as the Doctor and not the politics outside or the business outside, the career decisions, why he left, was he pushed out, did he decide to leave on his own. I'm not talking about that. Well, maybe I will, but not right now. Right now, I'm going to talk about, well, I'll finish talking about why I'm sad. I'm sad because I thought I would have longer time with him. I'm sad because he is so perfect as the Doctor. I'm sad because he is a classic Doctor in the modern era, and the two mesh together so well. And I'm sad because he didn't get enough love. He did from the fandom. I think the fandom enjoys his work the most. They may love the 10th Doctor stories in the Russell T. Davies era. They may love that more than anything, but they love Peter Capaldi's Doctor. But the average fan, the person that probably just watches Doctor Who as it airs and forgets about it, doesn't pay attention to the continuity and the canon, doesn't do a rewatch, isn't able to live inside these stories the way a real fan can. Hey, it's just old. Bring back Matt Smith. Bring back David Tennant. Ugh. You see those fucking clickbait articles? Matt Smith may return to Doctor Who. Yeah, maybe he will. For like a 60th anniversary show or like a 75th anniversary story. But he's not going to become the Doctor again. And fucking stupid to write an article about that. And to make stupid fans think that, oh, Matt Smith will come back. Oh, David Tennant might come back. Bring back Russell T. Davies. It's not going to happen. Time moves forward. People move on. Especially in show business. And Doctor Who... Doctor Who is something else, man, because the property, the brand, the character, the story is going to go on. But the changes, the regenerations, the renewals, the rebirths, the rebooting, the soft rebooting, mind you, it's good because life always changes. Things change. People change. Matt Smith's final monologue, his final speech before he regenerated, maybe his best. You remember those times, the run of your Doctor, but it ends. And a new Doctor comes. But it's beautiful because it's the same as the Doctor that came before. It's the same person, same continuity. Everything changes, but it all stays the same. I'm sad. I'm very sad. I don't want him to go. And I can talk about a female Doctor. I've talked about it before. I haven't said very nice things. I have a more open mind now that it's happening, now that it's upon us. I'm more worried about Chris Chibnall, to be honest with you. I'll talk about that too at a later date. But it feels like it's not time for Peter Capaldi to leave this role. In some ways, it feels like he's just getting warmed up. And we'll get to all that, because we're going to look at his 3 series as Doctor Who and how his character grew. I'm going to go as deep as I can without doing a rehash of each story. I don't want to do that. I don't want to review stories here. I want to pay tribute to the man, to the 12th Doctor, and to Peter Capaldi. So what makes the 12th Doctor stand out from the other incarnations of the Doctor? I think we can look at it 2 different ways. Well, really, we can look at it 2 different ways, but, well, Well, Adric, shut up. Adric, shut up. Let's take a look at it in two ways. Number one, witch doctors can be categorized as cranky and more alien than all the rest. And where does the 12th doctor stand among those doctors categorized as cranky and more alien? The second way that we'll examine how the 12th doctor stands out from his previous incarnations is by answering the question, what is 12th's personality at the beginning of each of the three series he's featured in, and where does his character development during that series take him? Oh, you don't understand what I'm saying? Is that what you're writing down? What, you're writing with a crayon now? That's great, Adric. Really fan-fucking-tastic. You've done some great character development here yourself, I have to admit. The cranky doctors. The cranky doctors. And I'm not at all an expert on the first doctor, and I won't ever claim to be an expert on the first doctor so long as the only first doctor stories I've seen are An Unearthly Child and the Aztecs. I saw the Aztecs because that was the first doctor story on Netflix when there was Doctor Who on Netflix, which feels like so long ago. That's a bittersweet memory too, because that's how I discovered, like many newer people to the fandom, I discovered Doctor Who on Netflix because my buddy Brian kept telling me to watch it. And An Unearthly Child, at one point, I wanted to make an attempt to watch every Doctor Who story, starting with the first Doctor Who story going forward. And I got through An Unearthly Child, and I even got through the first Dalek story, whatever the fuck that's called. I forget what that's even called. But it's not easy to get through first Doctor stories. It really isn't. All the respect in the world to them, but they're not easy to get through. I'll do it one day. One of my life goals is to watch the first Doctor's run. That said, basing my assessment on those two stories and what I've read about the first Doctor, William Hartnell's first Doctor is a cranky, cankerous Doctor. Definitely more alien than most of his counterparts. And when I say more alien, I don't mean less human. The Doctor's always going to display human characteristics. But I go back to the keyword from before the break, detached. Again, we're going to use detached quite a few times as we go through the 12th Doctor. Detached from humanity and the feelings that humans have. The first Doctor, 12th Doctor, maybe they have a good understanding of what those feelings are, why humans have these feelings. I'm talking sadness, manic feelings, anxiety, worry, fear. The Doctor understands why humans have these feelings and understands what those feelings feel like. It is alien. It's alien to sympathize with those feelings, but not feel them yourself and not play to those feelings that another person has. Not as human as the other doctors. Detached. The first doctor is more alien than the second and the third. For sure, we'll get to the others. The first doctor, you can tell he's an alien. Many times. I think, like I said, I didn't watch his stories. I'm just going off what I read. So how does the first doctor's characteristics compare to the 12th doctors? And in all honesty, I can't comment. It would be unprofessional of me to claim that I know enough about the first doctor to make a comparison to the 12th. I can say this comfortably. The first doctor stories do not age well, although many of the classic era stories do not age well, at least from a pop culture point of view. If the first doctor and the 12th doctor are as similar as they are being billed in Twice Upon a Time, the upcoming Christmas story, then the edge for cranky and alien doctor, in my opinion, would have to go to Peter Capaldi's 12th doctor. Most likely time will not be kind to the modern era serials either, but we're not yet removed from the Peter Capaldi era, and the stories that Peter Capaldi was a part of are far more relevant than first doctor stories, and the production of Peter Capaldi stories are without question a lot easier to digest for any viewer. At times, the fourth doctor could be cranky. I'm a lot more comfortable talking about Tom Baker's doctor because I've watched more fourth doctor stories than any other doctor in the classic era. And the fourth doctor, maybe he was more alien than the 12th, but I think as a whole, classic era incarnations of the doctor are more alien than modern era incarnations of the doctor. And like I said in my little monologue at the beginning of this segment, the 12th Doctor has been compared to classic era incarnations of the Doctor more than any other modern era. And I believe at the heart of Stephen Moffat's overarching series storyline is the idea that 12 is a throwback to the classic era at the very least. But in the 12th Doctor's best moments, he is a perfect fusion of classic and modern era Doctor Who storytelling, and a Doctor that can stand tall in any story throughout the classic era, Doctors 1 through 4, and some of the modern era Doctors that came before him. For argument's sake, let's say Tom Baker's 4th Doctor is more alien. Though it can be argued he's not, let's say he is, and not argue it. The 12th Doctor is crankier than the 4th Doctor. The 12th Doctor seems older, if not wiser, than the 4th Doctor. And the 12th Doctor has less patience for what he sees as weaknesses in humanity, or at least the weaknesses in humanity that he experiences. The 4th Doctor's one-liners and his offbeat sense of humor is not something you see in any other Doctor, and I've never heard any classic Who fan speak of the 4th Doctor with dislike or disdain. I've never heard anybody speak about the 4th Doctor in any negative way, unless it's somebody who has no idea what Doctor Who is, sees the production quality, and sees Tom Baker's hair, hears his British accent, and is like, why would I ever watch this show? This is ridiculous. Like, the accent, the hair, the production quality. And then you got to be like, well, you don't understand, so. Adric was one of the 4th Doctor's companions. I don't think anybody knew that. That's great, Adric. Thank you for that. You notice, Adric, how I don't even really ask you questions anymore? You notice that, right? Okay. Oh, he's going to draw a picture. Okay. I think it's common knowledge that the 4th Doctor is the Doctor of choice throughout classic and modern Doctor Who. So yeah, he's possibly more alien than the 12th Doctor, but this guy is not cranky. He's not. The 12th Doctor's one-liners compared to the 4th. They have a darker edge, and most of the time, the 12th Doctor's one-liners are only humorous because of the situation he's in, which is generally darker and less forgiving than the situations the 4th Doctor is in when he throws us some one-liners. The 6th Doctor, by design, I believe, was more alien than the 5th Doctor that preceded him. The 6th Doctor was more detached from humanity in a lot of the same ways that the 12th Doctor is. It's actually a pretty good comparison that I'm coming up with between the 5th and 11th Doctors and their respective regenerations into the 6th and 12th incarnations of the Doctor. In both regenerations, a youthful, hopeful, energetic Doctor failed where they were confident they wouldn't, saw things and people that countered their notions of life in the universe and on Earth. Both incarnations of the Doctor that emerged from their regeneration were more alien and more detached and crankier, and generally darker, which we said means mean, more alien, more detached, crankier by far than the Doctor that came before, right? Think about it. The differences between the 12th Doctor and the 11th Doctor. And if you're familiar with Classic Who, think about the differences between the 6th Doctor and the 5th Doctor. Maybe the major difference between the 5th to 6th regeneration and the 11th to 12th regeneration is that the 6th Doctor is all in all forgettable. The 12th, at least for now, is universally applauded and held in very high esteem among the fandom. And speaking of the fandom, there is an argument emerging that Peter Capaldi is a great all-time Doctor that is the victim of poor writing and weak stories. I personally don't buy into this way of thinking at all. But if I did, I would say that this is the same victimization that the fandom gives to Colin Baker's 6th Doctor. Like I said much earlier, there is no bad Doctor. The program has never suffered because of the actor that was cast as the Doctor, nor has it suffered because of the way any actor portrayed the Doctor. Long before the Doctor is ever criticized, the writing, the show running, the story arcs will be run through, destroyed, burnt down as a token of respect to the immortality of the character of the Doctor, and a token of respect to the effort and the work put in by the actor portraying the Doctor. Basically, the Doctor will never take the blame. And if we get to a point where the Doctor is taking the blame, well, I mean, that just means we have excellent, excellent writing and horrible casting. And I don't think we'll ever get there. I doubt anybody thinks we'll ever get there. But anyway, those are the 4 cranky Doctors. The 1st, the 4th, the 6th, and the 12th. And I feel weird even including the 4th Doctor among the other 3. Which incarnation is both the crankiest of the 4, and for lack of better phrasing, which best inhabits the Doctor. Therefore, what I mean which turns in the best stories as the Doctor. And I just went through the three cranky Doctors that challenged Capaldi's 12th, and I can't say that anyone is more cranky than the other, excluding the fourth Doctor. So the first, 6, and 12, I can't say that any is crankier than the others. Well, I can, but not to finality. Like I said, 12 is crankier than 4, but so are 1 and 6. 6 may seem more susceptible to fun than 12 and 1. Could be argued that he isn't as cranky. Either way, the 6th Doctor stories are weak and out of place with the rest of Doctor Who television mythology. So he's disqualified. The 1st Doctor and the 12th Doctor, they're both cranky, perhaps equally, and they're both more alien than their other incarnations, at least during the era they are a part of. Being that I am admitting to not being very knowledgeable of the 1st Doctor, it wouldn't be fair to say the 12th Doctor is crankier and more alien than the 1st Doctor. I will settle that both incarnations, the 1st and the latest, are on equal footing with their aged, wise, short-tempered, curmudgeonly, is that a good way to use curmudgeon? Curmudgeonly and overall cranky personality. Although, as Adric is pointing out via pencil, I was using a pencil, pointing out via pencil and paper, and not, he's not using his big boy voice, nor is he using any voice at all, but he has a point. He's pointing out that I really shouldn't speak to the 6th Doctor. I started watching The Twin Dilemma, which is his first story. The Twin Dilemma. I couldn't get through his first story because it sucked. So I admit that I probably know less about the 6th incarnation of the Doctor than I do about the 1st incarnation of the Doctor. So maybe this negates my entire argument. Maybe it takes away any credibility from what I'm saying. But F the 6th Doctor and F you, Adric. We will take a break there. Check out some music or whatever nonsense transmit to you via the interweb while I try to grab Adric by the ear. He scampered off again, but I can see him hiding behind the bookshelf. Yes, I'm talking about you. I can see you, Adric. You can't make me call my knowledge of the 6th Doctor out and then run off and not expect me to expect you to use your mouth to speak words containing your own blasted opinion. Now get over here before I lose my effing mind and...
Buttons. Got it.
Yes. Yes. No.
Yeah. Okay. But I understand what you are saying. And yet here we are recording and you won't say anything into the microphone. What? No. No. They can't hear you because you aren't speaking into the microphone. You understand how this works, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, that's great, Adric. It's really, really great. And yes, I'm being sarcastic. Okay. Anyway, the 12th Doctor that we meet in Deep Breath is not the same Doctor we will be saying goodbye to in Twice Upon a Time. It is. Yes, Adric, why don't you say that into the microphone, punk ass? Obviously, as Adric points out, in a way that only I can hear, it is the same Doctor, the 12th incarnation played by Peter Capaldi, with all in all, the same personality and obviously the same memories, except for the specifics of Clara Oswald, like who she is, what she looks like. But the 12th Doctor as Series 8 begins, and the 12th Doctor as Series 10 comes to a close as he prepares for regeneration are different in quite a few ways. And that's where we go from here. We took a look at the Doctors that are considered to be cranky. Now we're going to go deep with the three series that the 12th Doctor is featured in. And like I said, I'm not going to do a review of each episode. This isn't a story review. That would be more for a Stephen Moffat episode of That's Great, Adric. The Peter Capaldi episode, the one that you're listening to now, it's not a review. It's not a walkthrough of his stories. I want it to be bigger than that. But we are going to look at the series separately. And an interesting, I don't know if it's a side note, but it is rather interesting and I can't take credit for it. I saw it on, believe, the Gallifrey Reddit page, looking at Series 8, Series 9, Series 10 of modern Doctor Who. Some of the fandom continue to number the series from where the classic series left off, which is, I don't know, what was that fucking, I don't know what the last 7th Doctor series is. Is it Series 27? I'll fucking tell you right now. Will I tell you right now? I don't know if I'll tell you right now. Let's see. Hold on a sec. Okay, so 26. Okay, right. Nothing to do with anything, but some people continue the series count from the Seventh Doctor's final series, which was series 26 of Doctor Who. Long hiatus, TV movie, big finish, whatever the F. We come back, modern era, but it's series one. And it makes sense to number it that way. You know, Russell T. Davies decided that maybe they'll get more new viewers if they call it series one than if they bring back a show and call it series 27. Some of the fandom, particularly the ones that really enjoy the classic series, they call series one Christopher Eccleston's Ninth Doctor series. They call that series 27. Going by the actual count, by modern series count, the 12th Doctor covers series 8, series 9, series 10. If you're being all-inclusive, it's series 34, 35, 36. It doesn't matter either way. Even Adric's nodding off. It doesn't matter. If you look at series 8, 9, 10, 34, 35, 36, however you want to number these series, it's these three 12-episode runs that make up Peter Capaldi's reign as the 12th Doctor. And again, I'm not going to go through each individual story, but I am going to look at each individual series, talk about the thematic elements, the plot devices, the storylines that make up the development of the 12th Doctor's character so we can figure out who Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor is and if I am right in my thinking that he could quite possibly be the best Doctor that we've ever seen. As Series 8 begins and gets underway, there are three lead characters. The 12th Doctor, the Doctor's companion, Clara Oswald, played by Jenna Coleman, and Danny Pink, played by Samuel Anderson. If you look at Series 8, 9, and 10, and try to connect all three thematically, you'll find that it's not very difficult to do so. Death being a part of life, fear of dying, fear of having the ability to cheat death, are all concepts and themes that are explored through Series 8, 9, and 10. We start with Series 8. Danny Pink becomes a love interest for the companion for Clara Oswald, and his character functions as more than just a love interest. I think that he comes to symbolize the private life that Clara has, up until Series 9, held on to as very important to her, separating her private life and her travels with the Doctor. Whereas 9 out of 10 companions live in the TARDIS full-time while they travel with the Doctor, Clara Oswald has always been determined to keep her own life away from the Doctor. Her romance with Danny Pink symbolizes that determination. For the Doctor, Danny Pink represents the soldier, the killer following orders, unable to think for himself. Another idea that is explored heavily in Series 8 and returned to a few times in Series 9 and 10. At the end of Series 8, Danny Pink is struck by a car and killed. And the final two-parter of the series begins with Clara Oswald attempting to bring Danny back from wherever it is that people go to when they die. In death, Danny Pink is able to complete his own character arc, as underdeveloped as it may have been, as Danny acclimates himself to a post-death life. Shut the fuck up, Adric. I know what it means, so it doesn't matter if you don't know, or if the audience doesn't know. As Danny adjusts and acclimates himself to his post-death life in the Nethersphere, he is told by his handler, and I forget the name of this character, and it doesn't matter, but he's told by his handler, another person that dwells in the Nethersphere, which means another person who is living post-death, wishes to see him. And it turns out it is a child that wants to see Danny Pink, a child of Middle Eastern descent. And as it turns out, years ago, as Danny Pink served in the military and was stationed in the Middle East, he accidentally killed this young boy, and it is something that has haunted him every day of his life since. After the Doctor and Clara defeat Missy, the Master regenerated, Danny Pink has the option to return to the land of the living. And instead of taking that journey, he gives his one-way ticket back to life to the young child that he killed during war. So a man with all the reason in the world to live, with life taken from him in a horrible accident, is actually blessed with the ability to return to life and decides there is a young boy more deserving of that gift.
the exploration of the same elements of death that were tackled in Series 8 continue on in Series 9 in a more impactful way, at least for the Doctor. As Danny Pink dies in Series 8 and is faced with a moral choice of returning to his life, conquering death, Series 9 finds Clara Oswald with a very similar conflict, as she also, towards the end of Series 9, meets her fate and dies. In Series 9, Clara and Series 8, Clara are pretty different Claras. In Series 9, Clara Oswald has become more like the Doctor than ever before, to the point where she may believe herself invincible and able to think out of any conflict or situation that she comes across. Unfortunately for her, she's too clever for her own good, and it costs her her life. And the remainder of the series features the Doctor going the long way to get the ability to travel to that moment where Clara dies and save her from her fate. As the story progresses, the Doctor and Clara reach the conclusion that they can't travel together because, at this point, being willing to cheat death and change time to continue their, what can be described as, a codependent relationship, their behavior could unravel the very fabric of the universe. Unlikely, but this is what people in the know are telling the Doctor, and the Doctor agrees with this. So Clara and the Doctor part ways. The way they do this is the Doctor will not be able to remember who Clara is, what she looks like.
It is actually very reminiscent of the way the 10th Doctor went about making his last full-time companion, Donna Noble, forget about him. In that instance, however, Donna had no recollection of any of the adventures that she went on with the Doctor. And also, she didn't remember the Doctor. In this case, the Doctor is making himself forget. And although he will remember the adventures that he went on with Clara, and he will remember that Clara meant everything to him, and it was not, I repeat, it was not a romantic relationship. Although the Doctor will remember all of that, if he walked past Clara Oswald in the street, which wouldn't happen because she is dead, he wouldn't recognize her. What she looked like, what she sounded like, a void in the Doctor's memories.
Clara, meanwhile, has her own TARDIS and has promised to return to the moment of her death and accept her fate. And though it is somewhat left open-ended at the end of Series 9, as we see Clara and Macy Williams, the big guest star for Series 9, going off and traveling in the TARDIS for a few trips before returning to that moment, I think it has to be assumed that Clara does return to that moment and she does accept her death. So in Series 8 and Series 9, this is twice that one of the three leads has died, twice that they've had the opportunity to return from death, and twice that they've realized this is not something they can do, it's not natural, and that death is their fate and they have to accept it. Which brings us to Series 10.
And in the final two-parter, the second half, the Doctor falls. The 12th Doctor is literally dying. And yes, Adric, yes, those of you at home, I am aware that it seemed with every series during the Stephen Moffat era, the Doctor was in danger of dying. But this time, really dying. This situation isn't like the Doctor dying in Series 6 or the Doctor dying in Series 5. The 12th Doctor was hurt during the final two-parter of Series 10. His physical body is dying and preparing to regenerate. Towards the end of The Doctor Falls, 12 is fighting off his regeneration, refusing to continue his new regeneration cycle. As he is fighting off his regeneration, he comes across the first Doctor.
The first incarnation of the Doctor, as we know through marketing for Twice Upon a Time, is also confronting his own regeneration. So the first regeneration of a first regeneration cycle for the Doctor, and a first regeneration for the second regeneration for the Doctor. The two cranky, most alien incarnations of the Doctor, facing the end of their respective lives, unsure of what is going to come next, and refusing to accept it outright. The difference being for the 12th Doctor, and this goes back to the 11th Doctor, who seemed at peace with the end of his life, the 12th Doctor doesn't seem to want to go through another regeneration. Does he find a way to cheat death? We know that he won't, because we know that the 13th Doctor has been cast. We know that Twice Upon a Time is Peter Capaldi's final story, the final story of the 12th Doctor. But the themes
that Moffat has been playing with since Series 8, since before Series 8, since his run with Matt Smith, should come to a head in this Christmas story, and I hope it's done as thoughtfully as I think that it can be, because it will really cement Stephen Moffat's time as showrunner and script editor of Doctor Who. And for Peter Capaldi, for the 12th Doctor, while I feel that there was still more time for him, and that we did see his best, but we could have seen so much more of his best, all that put aside, Twice Upon a Time seems like it will play in perfectly with the theme of death being a part of life, accepting death, and power over death not necessarily being a good thing. These elements, these themes that have already been explored in Series 8 and Series 9. So basically, that's the overview for the three series of the 12th Doctor. Adric is tapping his wrist. He's not wearing a watch, but he's tapping his wrist as if to tell me, that's it for this episode. And it is. And we will be back within the next
few days. We will be back with an in-depth look at Series 8 and Series 9 and Series 10. We'll throw in the Christmas stories that belong to the 12th Doctor. We'll touch on the theme of death and the overview that we talked about today. But we will go deeper and we will look at more characters than the big three that I consider the main characters of the 12th Doctor's run being. Care to take a guess, Adric? Very good. Nice job, buddy. The 12th Doctor. Great work. So the three main characters, the 12th Doctor, like Adric said, Clara Oswald, his companion for Series 8 and 9, and Danny Pink. Those three for Series 8 and 9, and for Series 10, the 12th Doctor, Missy, who is the Master Regenerated, and if you don't know that, I don't know why you're listening to this, and Bill, who we didn't talk about today, but we will talk about in the next episode.
Especially relating to the 12th Doctor, his character, the arc his character goes on, with the goal of answering, where does the 12th Doctor stand among all his previous incarnations? Adric, sometimes I hate you. Thank you for listening. That's Great Adric, a Doctor Who podcast. Thank you.